Is it 6 days the world was created? Was there an Adam and Eve that came from scratch? Is the Garden of Eden a magical fairy tale? Actually, was God, there's a big God in the sky who said, let there be light, and the things formed. Actually, a lot of this parallels our contemporary understanding of cosmic and human evolution. And it's amazing how accurate our memories are. So it's not in contradiction to the way we understand where the universe comes from. It's actually a remarkable match to it. But it adds a moral dimension. And this is what I'm working with our sixth and seventh grade, which is, yes, it's not just, ooh, there's evolution in the Bible. And yes, there is the Big Bang in the Bible. And yes, there's the origin of agriculture and of shepherding in the Cain and Abel story. It's that the Bible says it has a moral dimension. There are moral implications to every change that happens. And with change comes responsibility. So now to the fable that we have of Adam and Eve and where it is that we became conscious. We got the knowledge of good and evil. So does anyone have anything for me to defend Eve against these heinous charges that she is to blame? So the two of them were naked, the man and his wife, yet they felt no shame. Now the serpent was the shrewdest of all the wild beasts that the Lord had made. He said to the woman, did God really say, you shall not eat of the tree of the garden? Okay, now, what should we be asking at this time? Did God really say, you shall not eat of, going back, I'm picking up on what you're saying. Who did God speak to? Adam. How is she supposed to know what God said? So remember, this is the key part, which is we all blame it on her. But the question is, how does she know what God said? God never gave the command to her. So like Naomi was trying to say, like, we have to be very careful with the way we word things, the way we communicate things to others. So he goes to her who has not heard, and then he works her, he cons her, rather than going to Adam. So how is she supposed to know? I wish she's innocent. She doesn't yet have this, she hasn't eaten yet. She hasn't been enlightened. So for her, she, instead of saying, I don't know, you know, I didn't hear what God said, she says, no, we may eat of the fruit of the other trees of the garden. It's only about the fruit of the tree in the middle of the garden that God said, you shall not eat of it or touch it lest you die. Now, one thing that's interesting about that is she doesn't know that it's the good and evil fruit. She just knows that it's in the middle of the garden. And she says, you shall not eat of it or touch it lest you die. So what's the problem with you shall not eat it or touch it lest you die? God never said that. So number one, God didn't speak to her. So how does she even reporting this? And but that's the biggie. Yes, you shall not eat of it. Does God ever say you shall not touch it? No. Doesn't say that to Adam. So why does she think you can't touch it? So Adam is to blame. Because the only way she knows the command is if it came from Adam. And so all these texts that say it's all her fault, if Adam communicated to her that you can't even touch it, then that is where the serpent finds his in to Connor. Because he's like, you can't touch it? I touch it all the time. You know what I mean? Look what happens to me. I'm touching it right now, not dying. Touching it again, not dying. You know, and so like that, no, that's like exactly, it's hilarious what's going on here. That's really what's going on. So either as Adam is the one that said, don't touch it. So the serpent said to the woman, got it. You're not going to die. But God knows that as soon as you eat of it, your eyes will be open. And you will be like divine beings who know tov and ra, who know good and bad. When the woman saw that the tree was good for eating and a delight to the eyes. So she's like, well, it does look yummy. She's not yet enlightened. For her, it's just, well, the fruit looks good. And the rabbis have this idea that he's touching it and saying, you see, I'm not dying, I'm not dying. Then she said, and now that she heard from the serpent that the tree was desirable as a source of wisdom. Now, is that so bad? So the second thing, first of all, Adam's to blame for miscommunication, like most men are. I love men, but men stink at communication, and we know that all through the Torah. And the second thing is it really so bad that she says, well, it's not when you touch it, you die. It's like, apparently, you get enlightened, you get to know, you get to be like God, you get to have wisdom. That's not necessarily a bad thing. It's not like he promises her a rose garden or a Garden of Eden, no pun intended. It's wisdom, and it's the ability to see good and evil. So something I didn't notice until this year. The word for good and evil here is just tov and ra. Let's translate that as not just morally good and morally evil, but when Lilian and Rafi were reading today, how did you know that the Aliyah was coming to an end if you didn't have the Luach? What word was a signal that Aliyah is over from the Torah? And it was Tov, the second day. And it was Tov, the third day. You heard the word good, and it was good, and it was good, and it was good. So guess what? Adam and Eve have no idea that it's good. And this is something Richard Elliot Friedman points out. We tend to think of it as they have a knowledge only of morality, of something being morally good and morally evil. But the words don't have to mean that at all. They can just mean, like, that's a really good cup of coffee, and that's a really bad cup of coffee. That's a tov cup of coffee, and that's a ra cup of coffee. So, okay, you got that, right? But so now drop the asimon, which is they don't even appreciate the Garden of Eden. What we gained with enlightenment, with evolution, with consciousness, was actually the ability to appreciate the good things. It wasn't just free will. And I make that mistake all the time. I'll be talking to you and I'll say, Becky, you know the story in Genesis, let's teach it to the kids, the coming into being of free will. But it's actually not free will. They already have free will. She can eat from it if she wants. They have free will already. It's actually the coming into being of judgment, of the ability to see things as good and bad. So they didn't even have the appreciation of creation before. They were just a part of it like the animals. Like, I don't know if a lizard or a fish or even a giraffe says, this is great. I can't believe it. I love my neck. I get to eat the tallest leaves on those trees. I just love my family. Maimonides says they experience maternal love, but do they experience the world as good? So remember that coming into being is our ability to see good as well, to experience the blessing. So is she so bad that she wants the wisdom to experience the great world that God created? It's not just that she wanted the ability to choose evil, which is a way the commentators make it sound. And so he gives it to her, and she eats. And they saw that they were naked, and they sewed together fig leaves and made themselves fig things. By the way, the commentators point out, it's not an apple in the garden. It just says fruit. And the commentators not all of them say it's an apple, of course. Many of them say it's a pomegranate, because a pomegranate, by tradition, has 613 seeds in it, which would be the knowledge of Torah, the knowledge of the 613 commandments. Let me read one thing from Richard Elliot Friedman. And you shall not touch it. But God is not reported to have said that they could not touch it. So Rashi notes, the dialogue appears to develop the principle that if one starts out by adding to a command, one may come to take away from it in the end. So basically, Naomi was quoting Rashi about the principle that comes up later in Deuteronomy. We should note that this principle is already introduced here, as Rashi points out, at the beginning of the Torah, because it is an ikar. It is an essential foundational principle. And therefore, it is pronounced by Moses twice in Deuteronomy. Quoting them both times, you shall not add to the thing that I command you, and you shall not take away from it. Moreover, God is not quoted as having given any instruction to the woman. The natural understanding is that she learned it from the man. So it may suggest that he adds it to protect her. You know, he's like, we need to add a fence around the law to protect the woman, but the fence around the law, which you're not allowed to do, we're not allowed to add a command around a command. Once a little precaution goes around, that is not really the command, it leads to not keeping the rule. So the idea is, I better put a fence around a rule. I have to make more rules to make sure no one violates the rules. But then, once you do that, the Torah is saying it leads to people violating the original rule, because it's like a miscommunication. It's an adding of an authority that's not there. So anybody else want to weigh in on, so it's Adam's fault, because he added to the commands that weren't there, and that's one of the things we can't do. So it's interesting that today, the Orthodox say, women shouldn't study Torah. And they actually shouldn't read prayers. They should read Psalms, right? The book of Psalms is supposed to be the only prayers they're really supposed to be doing, looking at. And I got an email this week from someone who saw pictures of Simchat Torah on the internet and on Facebook and commented that, you know, women are not allowed to touch a Torah scroll. And it's quite disappointing that your rabbi apparently doesn't know that. He should know that, right? Now, so just so you know, so I sent back the quotes from the codes of Jewish law, which all agree that women, even menstruating women, can touch Torah scrolls as well as non-Jews. And the only rule about touching Torah scrolls for anyone, an idolater, a heretic, an evil person, is just that if their hands are filthy, they have to wash their hands. It's only a question of physical dirt. The idea being that we do this today. That the men are saying, they're putting like this, you can't touch the Torah. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's too much of a source of wisdom. You may just appreciate the goodness of life by becoming wiser through it, as well as knowing the things to avoid, rather than trusting on your husband to tell you those things. But it's amazingly relevant to the way that, in modern sociological terms, women have been distanced from Torah study, from prayer and from the synagogue in a way that's only about 150 years old. It was in the 1850s that this movement to move women back into the kitchen was really strong. And it's not in the Talmud. And in fact, women were business leaders and women were out of the house. And it's just kind of relevant today that this idea of, so if anyone ever says, well, it was Eve who caused the whole problems, actually it was Adam, because he lied to her to protect her, to keep her from going over there, and that whole lie produced the whole problem.
How many
fences around the Torah can we do to isolate women from this tradition for their own protection and for our protection? Thank God for the women who don't listen to this nonsense that is against Jewish law, which men are telling them, you can't even touch it. And then someone says, you know, if you touch it, you might just get wise and learned and know how beautiful the world is and know where not to err. And thank God they do. Shabbat shalom.